Rich Kimble, Ryan Wehning with you here on Downtown. And let's kick off this hour in a big way. Our next guest on the G&M Family Market phone line is an author of two of the best baseball books you'll ever read, Big Hair and Plastic Grass, and Stars and Strikes, Baseball in America in the Bicentennial Summer of 76, contributor to a number of publications, including Rolling Stone. Dan Epstein, welcome back to Downtown.
Hey, thanks, Rich. Great to be back.
Let's start by talking about a recent conversation you had with director Judd Apatow about his 30 for 30 on Daryl Strawberry and Doc Gooden, which was just an absolutely wonderful film. Tell us a little bit about that conversation.
Well, yeah, Judd's a huge Mets fan from way back. He really started following the team in the late 70s when they were absolutely terrible. And I think he'd always been kind of interested in the Doc Gooden and Daryl Strawberry story because of how, you know, these guys kind of came out of nowhere in the early 80s and really looked like not only were they both bound for the Hall of Fame, but that they were going to save the Mets and turn them into, you know, a dynasty, really. And, you know, they did win the World Series in 1986, all right, as of course we all remember, but that was kind of it. They really didn't, they never got back to the World Series. The team kind of fell apart or was picked apart by the administration in the late 80s. And Doc and Daryl were both struggling with substance abuse problems that, you know, really they'd been struggling with to one degree or another since they were in their teens, even before they were playing professional baseball. So I think when ESPN approached Judd about doing this 30 for 30 or doing a 30 for 30, this was his idea. It was like, this is the story I want to do, and we really kind of have to do them both together because, you know, even though they really weren't that close as friends, their destinies were sort of tied up together in a very parallel way.
Dan, as a fan of Mark the Bird Fidrich, the larger-than-life Detroit Tiger pitcher, what was it like being a part of the MLB Network special that they did?
Oh, man, that was such a huge honor. I mean, I was 10 years old when the Bird had his amazing Rookie of the Year season in 1976. And really, again, another guy who just kind of came out of nowhere, really even more so than Doc and Daryl, because those guys, at least, there was some hype on them. With Mark Fidrich, he sort of, you know, he made the Tigers in spring training of 76, but there was no advance hype at all. There was no, like, you know, Tigers have a hot new pitching prospect and he's kind of a weirdo. I mean, there was nothing. So he really kind of emerged out of nowhere and took not only baseball, but just America by storm in 76. And that was the year that I became a baseball fan, and I was living in Ann Arbor, Michigan at the time, so of course I was a Tigers fan, and of course the Bird was my man. So, you know, if you told me at the age of 10 that someday I would be one of the people in a documentary on the Bird, kind of reflecting on what he meant to baseball in the city of Detroit in America, I would have had a very hard time processing that. It was a huge honor.
Having gone back and read your books and knowing what love you have for that era of baseball, as time goes by and we continue to get further and further away from that era, is music a sort of time machine that can help get you back to that period?
Well, for me, it definitely is. I think it's all kind of tied up. For me, as both a writer and as a fan of baseball and music, you know, I was listening to the AM radio while reading the box scores, so of course, you know, any song from the summer of 76 that was a huge hit is going to immediately zap me back to some game or another that I was reading about or watching. And so when I wrote Stars and Strikes, I really tried to, I made all the chapter titles, so gave them titles of song names from 1976, because I thought, ideally, I'd love to be able to include like a mixed CD or playlist download from 1976 for everybody to read the book, to accompany their reading of the book. But I thought, like, if I just put some well-known songs in the titles, that'll trigger an instant earworm. So it's kind of like the soundtrack is going in your head.
You've got a great event coming up, too. For anybody in the Chicago area on August 8th, it's the best of both worlds, a book signing for Stars and Strikes, and you're screening, I know, one of the great movies of your youth and most of our youths.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you all have any listeners in the Chicago area, but or who are going to be there in early August. But August 8th, I'm doing a Stars and Strikes signing and co-hosting a screening of the Bad News Bears, the Music Box Theater in Chicago. And Bad News Bears, of course, came out in the spring of 76, and to me is really the greatest baseball movie ever made. I think it really eschews the kind of sentimentality that usually hampers so many baseball films, and so many memorable characters. And, you know, Walter Matthau is Morris Buttermaker, the alcoholic former minor league pitcher who's tasked with coaching an extremely ragtag bunch of little leaguers that include Tatum O'Neill and Jackie Earl Haley. And I think anybody who saw the movie when it came out it's an inextricable part of their lives. But I think it's a movie that holds up really well today. I think if you haven't seen it, you really owe yourself a screening of it. Either come on out to the Music Box in Chicago on August 8th, or find it on Netflix or wherever. It's well worth a watch.
I'm trying to remember the story. Was it last year on your birthday that you got a birthday greeting from one of the cast members?
Oh no, actually, it was earlier this year. I wrote an article for Rolling Stone on why Bad News Bears is the greatest baseball movie of all time, and one of the Dave, I'm spacing on his last name, but he plays Toby in the film, and he sent me a tweet out of nowhere just like congratulating me on the piece, and it's just like, man, like, again, talk about one of those things, like, you know, 40 years ago, if you told me, like, one day Toby will reach out to you and give you a thumbs up for something you wrote, that's, you know, it still blows my mind to think about.
That's great. We're talking with Dan Epstein here on Downtown. We were talking about this before the show, and we love following you on social media and to see the pictures, the old baseball cards, and when old players have their birthday, it's great to look back and think about those players and how baseball has changed. But we were talking about managers and how, for whatever reason, we don't seem to have the colorful managers in Major League Baseball that we had back in that decade in the 1970s. There are no Billy Martins, no Earl Weavers anymore that I can think of. Who were the managers that you most enjoyed following at that time?
Oh, well, you know, definitely Earl Weaver and Billy Martin. And any games that they would manage against each other were always a treat, because you would, you know, not only would you see some great great tactics from each manager, but also they would constantly be doing things to try to throw the other off, and then they would inevitably end up in a fight with the umpire, maybe even getting thrown out of the game. I also love Sparky Anderson. I mean, Sparky was less colorful manager with the Reds, but really, and then later the Tigers, and really, but he had a very, very dry wit about him, and he was always good for some good post-game interviews. Dick Williams, who's also in the Hall of Fame along with Sparky and Earl, great manager for the first two A's championships of the 70s, and later went on to manage a lot of other really good teams, like in Montreal. And another really salty guy who was not afraid to mix it up with the umpires. But, you know, I think it's not even just the managers. I think owners, too. You don't see the kind of – you don't see colorful owners like George Steinbrenner, like Ted Turner, like Bill Beck in baseball today.
What did you think of the all-star uniforms, the ones that were used in the Home Run Derby, the throwbacks to the Padres?
You know, I really liked them. I think – it's weird to me, though, because I really like Padres yellow and brown uniforms, but the Padres themselves, like, don't seem to be willing to embrace that heritage, except for the occasional marketing thing, like in the All-Star game. I really wish they would go back to those colors, if not the actual design.
Dan, a lot of teams are wearing throwback jerseys tonight or throwback uniforms entirely. What's your favorite?
Wow. My personal favorite, and this is probably because I'm a Tigers fan, but the late 70s road jerseys that the Tigers had, I thought that was a really nice compromise between the sort of brightly colored polyester of the 70s and the more traditional look. But at the same time, I mean, if you're going to go with the most eye-popping version of 70s throwbacks, I mean, I love that the Pirates are going with their pillbox caps and yellow jerseys and black pants on Sundays. I think that's a great look. I just wish more of the players would show some stirrup with that instead of letting the pants flap around on the ground.
No way the White Sox will bring those shorts back, I suppose.
No, I really wish. I mean, this would be the year, because it was 40 years ago right. In August that the White Sox actually wore short pants for three games. And I'm actually going to a White Sox game, White Sox Tigers, on Saturday night, where they're doing a 76 jersey giveaway. And I thought that would be the perfect time for them to bust out the shorts. It doesn't look like they're going to do it.
You're based in Chicago now. Let's talk about those Cubs and this year's team that got off to that phenomenal start. And there was a lot of talk that they would just be the successor to the Seattle Mariners as a team that did it all in the regular season but couldn't win. Is this team positioned to be able to get to and maybe finally win that World Series?
Well, I think so, but I think they've been plagued by a lot of injuries. Dexter Fowler being out really hurts them. You really see it in their record. Like when Fowler is in the lineup, they have this amazing winning percentage, and when he's out, they're really struggling. I also think they've and I said this at the beginning of the season, that they've got a lot of holes in the bullpen. And I think we've seen that play out over the last couple of months. I mean, I think there's no question that they're one of the better teams in the majors right now, even with this slump that they've been in. But it's, you know, as we know, the postseason is such a different animal now with the various, you know, stacking several short series up against each other. And I think, you know, it often really comes down to pitching. That's no news to anybody. So I would like to see the Cubs shore up the bullpen at the trade deadline, but we'll see what happens.
Hey, Dan, can you stay on the line and stay with us a little longer? We'd love to talk with you more. We've got to get a little commercial break in. Can you hang around a bit?
Of course.
That'd be wonderful.
Absolutely.
We'll come back with more of Dan Epstein here on Downtown, 17 minutes after 4 on the Pulse, AM 620 WZON.
Mabel Water Center is now offering services for men. Since 1984, we have been known for providing non-judgmental, client-centered care to women in the greater Bangor area, and we are excited to announce that we are now offering that same care to men.
On Wednesday evenings from 4 to 6:30 p.m., we provide STI testing and treatments to people of all genders. Services are quick, private, and confidential. We accept private insurance, main care, and have reduced fees for people without insurance.
Mabel Water Center is easily accessible on the bus line at 700 Mount Hope Avenue, Suite 420. You can find us online at MabelWadsworth.org and call 947-5337.
At Quality Jewelers, all of our diamonds and jewelry are hand-selected to give you the best quality and value. We have one of the largest selections of diamonds, jewelry, and tourmaline in New England. And if we don't have just what you're looking for, we can get it here within a day or two thanks to our over 100 suppliers. Our master jewelers have over 50 years of experience and can create that one-of-a-kind custom-designed piece. Quality Jewelers at the Penobscot Plaza in Bangor and at qualityjewelers.com.
Back on Downtown at 19 after the hour, and Dan Epstein joining us. And Dan, just for you, here's a little taste of 1976 music.
Gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight.
Oh, yeah. We didn't say it would be the best of 76.
That's actually, Afternoon Delight is actually the title of Chapter 8 in Star Trek.
It was either that or Moonlight Feels Right. We couldn't decide.
Oh, classic Starbuck. That's definitely one of my favorite 76 jams.
Hey, well, so while we're on the subject of music here, we're asking guests here this month, and we're gonna feature some of the songs next month. What's your go-to summer song, the one that you've always got to turn up when it comes on the radio?
Wow. That's a really tough question. But as long as we're sticking to the 76, or as I'm sticking to the 76 thing, I think I got to go with Summer by War.
I think that's
just got a great groove, great lyrics about going to Disneyland and messing around on a CB radio. which is pretty much my summer of 76 in a nutshell.
I love it. Well, that's on our list. We'll put it right out there. You write a lot about music. Is there a band or an artist out there that maybe is under the radar that smart people would be wise to check out and learn more about?
Well, actually, they're going to be playing in Chicago tomorrow night. There's a band called All Them Witches, and I believe they're from Kentucky, but I could actually be wrong. But really cool, interesting kind of heavy rock with psychedelic flourishes. It's like they remind me kind of like if you cross the Allman Brothers with early Pink Floyd. Really great instrumentalists, but very interesting songwriting as well. And they're on my mind right now just because I'm going to go see them tomorrow. But I would recommend anybody go out and go on the internet and look up All Them Witches. And I know a lot of their songs are up on YouTube, so give them a shot.
Excellent. Love the recommendation. We've been talking about Stranger Things on Netflix. Have you checked that out yet?
No, I haven't, actually. I'm kind of annoyed with Netflix, to be honest. It seems like they're getting rid of all their really good old films in favor of all these series. I've been kind of boycotting the whole Netflix series thing, but is it good?
Ryan loves it. He's checked out the first two episodes and says it's great, and it's got a what was the reference that you made? Kind of a Goonies meets Stand By Me?
Yeah, the Goonies and Stand By Me. Really kid-centric, and the kids are, there's something fantastical about the kid characters that you're not quite sure of yet.
Oh, okay. Well, that's there's kind of a supernatural vibe to it?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, yeah, well, that's up my alley. So, okay, you talked me into it, Ryan.
We talked with you last year. You were writing about the last days of David Letterman as he had his countdown to the end of his tenure on late-night TV. And my gosh, the world of late-night television has sure changed a lot in the last year and in fairly unexpected ways. Who do you think now is the current, not ratings-wise, but in terms of offering good television, who's the current king or queen of late night?
Oh, well, you said queen. I got to go with Samantha Bee. Mm-hmm. I think she is far and away doing the most interesting and funny stuff on late night right now.
I agree with you 100% on that. She's great and kind of a continuation of that Jon Stewart talent tree.
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think a lot of, at least a couple of her writers were people she took with her from the Stewart show. But I just think like there's, you know, the gloves are off with her. She's not worried about kind of pleasing every aspect of the audience. She's just speaking her truth, and it resonates with me.
Dan, have you purely for entertainment purposes checked out any of the Republican convention?
No, man. you know, I've actually. I mean, last night I went to see Hart and Cheap Trick and Joan Jett in Chicago, and the night before I went to the Cubs-Mets game at Wrigley. So I've got a good excuse for not watching either night, but even if I'd been at home, I'm sure I would have found something else to do.
How was the concert? A Cheap Trick was here in Bangor last year, and they were fantastic. They're still getting it done.
Yeah, you know, Robin Zander's voice is unbelievable, and same with Hart and Wilson. I mean, it's so inspiring to see artists who, you know, they're not resting. Even though they're doing mostly old songs, they're not, they're not being halfway about it. It's like they can still belt it out, still hit the high notes, still just, you know, sing rings around so many of our current pop stars. So it was really inspiring to see them out there and still doing it.
Hey, before we let you go, one last baseball question, because there's a lot of talk here about the new collective bargaining agreement. One of the subjects is shortening the season, maybe back to 154 games. The DH always comes up. Where do you stand on the designated hitter?
Well, I've often said that the designated hitter is a crime against man and God. I think it makes the game a lot more boring to me. I understand the notion that it allows people, players like David Ortiz, for example, to play much longer, but it all kind of plays into that increasing specialization of the game that we've really seen pick up speed over the last 10 years or so. And but at the same time, it's also, now that interleague play has become a daily fact of life, it's absurd that we have the DH in one league and not in the other. So I'm also no fan of interleague play, at least not to the extent that they've dragged it out now. So I feel like with a designated hitter at this point, it's kind of like I don't see the American League willing to do away with it, and I think it's only a matter of time before the National League adopts it. And that's sad, but it also makes more sense than having leagues with two different rules who play each other every day.
Dan Epstein, the author of Big Hair and Plastic Grass and Stars and Strikes, Baseball in America in the Bicentennial Summer of 76. If you haven't read them, get them both. Put them close to your bed or wherever you read, because you want to go back and read them more than once like we have here. Dan, we love talking with you. Thanks so much for being with us again this afternoon.
Oh, thanks, Rich. Anytime. Always a pleasure rapping with you guys.
It's Dan Epstein here on Downtown, 27 minutes after 4 o'clock. And, man, I mean it about the books, too. I've read them both probably at least three times.
Yeah, I'm two times through one of them, and one time I've completed it once. But I made the joke earlier about the time travel thing. And really, with the way that he writes, with the way that he ties music and pop culture in with it, it is like a time portal.
Just great stuff. Dan Epstein, and again, a contributor, regular.